Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Transfer Cast, right here on LastWordOnFootball.com. This is the show where we're only serious about Arsenal transfer rumors. I am your host, Martin Hawkins. I'm the Arsenal Content Manager at Last Word on Football, and you can find me on Twitter at LWOSMartin. I'm joined as always by my two co-hosts, both of whom are also writers at Last Word. First is Mr. Chance Hare with an E. Welcome as always, Chance. Please tell the people where they can find you on Twitter.
Great to be back on the show. You all can find me at Chance Hare with an E, LWOS.
All right. Next up is Mr. Zach Raymond, who also has a podcast of his own called Footy Ado. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys just dropped a new episode the other day. Isn't that right?
Yes, we did. We dropped a new episode yesterday, so you can go check that out. You can follow at Footy Ado, and you can follow me at Zach Raymond.
All right, and listener, you can also follow the show's Twitter page to keep up with all the latest episodes at AFC TransferCast. So this week there weren't too many interesting rumors about the club. I think after the news came out that we weren't really going to be doing too many transfers, really focusing on signing players on frees, as well as maybe a swap deal or two, I think some of the journalists have stopped coming up with brand new rumors for us to talk about. So we're going to do something just a little bit different. We're going to do a post-mortem examination of Unai Emery's tenure at the club. And the idea for this show comes from a recent interview with none other but the Spanish Dracula by Sid Lowe for The Guardian, in which Emery discusses his time at Arsenal in depth and touches on a number of topics. So we're just going to go through the article and discuss the biggest talking points and decide just how much smoke he was blowing. So I'd like to start with one of the first main quotes from the article, and that goes, "The first season we did a lot well," Emery says. "I thought, this is my team. People said, Unai, we can see your personality in this side. There was spirit, games with intensity, energy. Tottenham, Manchester United, Chelsea, and we reached Arsenal's first European final in 13 years, playing very well against Napoli and Valencia. Finishing third was in reach, but we lost four decisive points against Crystal Palace and Brighton." So, Chance, I guess let's start with you. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. First of all, he says, the first season we did a lot well. Well, I can remember, you know, obviously reaching a European Cup final. That's nothing to sneeze at right there. There was that long unbeaten run early in the season. But overall, did you think that 18-19 season was a good season for Arsenal?
I think at the start, the first half of the season was definitely one with a lot of promise. With that 22-game unbeaten run, but I remember I was very hopeful that we were going to finish in a Champions League spot. And throughout the season, even after that run ended, I was still confident about it. I still had my faith in Unai Emery. But, you know, over time, the season started to slip away, you know. And I think the second half, especially towards the end of the season, yeah, we did good in the Europa League, reaching the final. Obviously, we can brag about that. But you did see what happened in the final, and you saw what happened in the Premier League, where we dropped all those points that, you know, if we gained them, there's definitely a good chance of us getting Champions League football. So, in my opinion, I thought the season overall was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, definitely can't argue with you there. And just the feeling around the club right at the end there, you know, after that second half, especially in Baku, it was just gutting almost. So Zach, how about you? Do you think Emery is right? Do you think he did a lot well in that first season?
I think Chance had it right, you know, that you know, the first half of the season was good, and then it really just all came crumbling down. But the whole thing with it is that I don't think that Arsenal really were playing that well during the good part of the season. I think that they were kind of just getting by, and you know when Emery first took over, we talked about, oh, a manager that's willing to, you know, make a halftime substitution and not afraid to go to his bench. And then it got to the point where he was doing it every week, and we're like, okay, this is actually just a manager that doesn't know what his best team is and doesn't know how to set up against a particular opposition. So I think that we were playing okay and coming out with, you know, some decent results, but not really playing as well as the results showed. Like, what was the unbeaten run we had? 22 matches?
I believe 22, yeah.
you know, in that run, at least in the Premier League, we hadn't led at halftime of a Premier League game until the second half of the season. So how well were we really playing? Were we just scraping by? Because that's what I think it, that's what I really think it was.
Yeah, yeah, very good point. And I think at the time, a lot of us fans sort of justified that by saying, oh, well, you know, with really good teams, it does, you know, if, even when they're not playing well, they still have a habit of picking up a point or three. And I think that was sort of our go-to excuse as to why, yeah, we just didn't really have the performances to go along with the results. So I also just wanted to ask you guys, he goes on to say, you know, people said, Unai, we can see your personality in this side. Zach, what sort of personality did you see in this side? To me, it felt a lot like the personality of Ben Stein, just very flat and not very exciting.
It really was flat. You know, the team, you know, I guess that North London Derby win was the only real time where we saw any sort of personality in the team. And, you know, tactically, it was kind of, all right, pass the ball around, find Kolasinac on the overlap, have him cut it back, and hope we score. And that's all we did for months. So I don't know what the personality that we're referring to really is.
Yeah, how about you, Chance? Did you see any personality in the side?
I'd have to say not much. The entire the squad at that point, it's in a tough period. Obviously, you know, trying to adapt to a different manager other than the one you've had for around 20 years, you know. A personality in a squad like this is hard to find in that kind of situation. But I'd have to agree with Zach where, like, the peak of whatever personality Arsenal did have was in that 4-2 win in the North London Derby. I'd have to say, if I were to give it a personality at all, which I don't really want to, because, you know, Arsenal that season, it's tough to comprehend, but I don't know. It is a bit flat. You know, it's hard to find spirit in that side, and especially in that season. It's kind of weird for me how Unai says that. I think he's just trying to find any sort of positive he can pull out of himself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was, I forget the exact statistic, but during that season, we did do points-wise a little bit better against the other top six teams than we had in a few seasons, which I think is part of the reason he specifically said. I mean, obviously, the Derby win was absolutely a joy, but also, you know, against Man United, against Chelsea, we did okay in the Premier League, considering, you know, that we were expected to lose 4-0 each time we went up against those types of clubs. But, you know, those were the only times that I can really remember getting a result that was better than expected. And we almost did it by being negative. We basically just tried to play the best defense that we could, which wasn't the best. And then we would just try and hit them on the break and say to Aubameyang and Lacazette, hey, sprinkle some magic on things. So
yeah, and we were allowing 20-something shots a game. Mm. It was tough to watch.
Yeah, yeah, I was just looking at it this morning. Our expected goals against for the season, this is courtesy of understat.com, 43.14 expected goals against. We actually allowed 35, I think. That's just from open play. But, you know, basically what I'm just trying to say is we should have allowed more goals than we did. I mean, we were just so, so negative. So I guess, you know, Zach, could you just give me your thoughts? Do you think that when he says, you know, spirit, intensity, energy, and mentioning these big clubs, do you think he's sort of trying to distract from the fact that we didn't show spirit, intensity, and energy against the smaller clubs?
To me, I look at that as, you know, this guy's out of a job. He wants to be a manager again, and he's just throwing out those words that are gonna grab people's attention. You know, if you're a club looking for a manager, you want someone that's going to bring spirit, you know, into the team, and he's trying to claim that he has that among other things, in his sides, and you know. Let's not forget what he's famous for at PSG, and that's the collapse against Barcelona, the 6-1 loss after winning the first leg in the Champions League 4-0. Where was the spirit, the intensity? Where was it then? Your team doesn't have it. It's just not something that is drilled into a side that Unai Emery manages, and I guess he doesn't realize that.
Yeah, you know, when he says these kind of things, it reminds me of listening to and reading through all of his pre- and post-match press conferences, where he would basically just talk about how, oh, the Arsenal way is to go out there and attack and play attractive football, and then you look at the play that's actually on the field, and it's just this boring garbage that we had to watch week in, week out. So it's like there's this disconnect between what he says and then what his teams do, and we're sort of seeing that again. Chance, is that fair, or am I completely off the mark there?
I agree with you. I think it's just Unai Emery trying to look good to the press, but him and everyone else knows it's failing when you see a team who's just playing essentially the opposite of what we expect and what he says he's seeing. It's like he's delusional, but he knows he isn't. He's just trying to look good, in my opinion.
Yeah, like Zach said, he is looking for a job. So right at the end of that that first big quote, he says, finishing third was in reach, but we lost four decisive points against Palace and Brighton. Chance, how much do you think finishing outside of the top four was down to that last stretch of the season where we lost four of those last seven games? Do you think that was the issue right there, or was the issue present, you know, throughout the whole season, or was it something that just sort of happened at the end of the year?
Looking at, you know, comparing the start of the season going from start to finish, it looks like the problem that Arsenal had, dare I say just one problem, there were many, but it seems like just over time, the more time we gave Unai Emery, more of these recurring problems built up, you know, the defensive errors, you know, the lack of competence in the midfield, the lack of spine in the players, you know, it's something that I think has built up over time. And obviously, you know, this season, that's what led to Unai Emery's sacking, but last season, it definitely started to show, and by the time around, you know, Brighton and Palace, I think that's just when Arsenal kind of just started to implode on itself, and we lost all those points. I think if Unai Emery knew what he was doing and was able to figure at least something out and try, you know, maybe try something different, you know, because he, boring old Arsenal, you know, pre-Wenger Arsenal is now post-Wenger Arsenal, boring, and Unai Emery didn't seem to want to change that, and it imploded on itself. I think if we were to, you know, do what he says in the press, play that fun, flowing, attacking football that we expected, we could definitely, you know, have gotten points from those mid-table, lower-table teams towards the end of the season, and it definitely could have spurred us on to Champions League, but sadly it didn't happen.
Yeah, it seemed like at times he was trying to channel that spirit of the boring old Arsenal when we would win each game 1-0, but unfortunately we kept losing games 1-0. So, Zach, do you agree? Do you think, you know, he was just sort of trying to find something to pin that late season collapse on and basically just identifying those two games, or do you think the issue was a lot bigger than just, oh, we kind of weren't ready for these two teams?
Well, yeah, the issue is already bigger than those two games because it's a four-game stretch that you're looking at that's really bad. Now, before this four-game stretch that ruined our chances at top four, we had gone 8 unbeaten, 4 consecutive clean sheets, but 8 unbeaten, and 7 of those were wins. And then we get to April 21st, we lose 3-2 to Palace. We lose 3-1 to Wolves in the midweek, and then we lose 3-0 to Leicester. So, progressively worse, conceding 3 goals in each game, scoring 2, then 1, then getting shut out, and then followed by a draw with Brighton. That stretch was horrendous to watch. It was, you couldn't see, there was a lack of identity in the team, and we really stumbled to the finish line. Now, meanwhile, this is all while we're going through the Europa League, and there's, you know, semifinal, first and second legs in between, you know, whatnot. And our focus was way, way too heavily put on the Europa League. Now, obviously, that's hindsight. If we had won the Europa League, we wouldn't be talking about it. But if you're looking back at the lineup, the team that played Crystal Palace, we started a back three that Konstantinos Mavropanos started. Carl Jenkinson started as a wing back. Like, we way, way too heavily rotated for our Premier League games. And that's down to the manager. Now, I know that these players go through a long season. And, you know, you do need some rotation. But if I told you you wanted to start Koscielny, Mustafi, and Mavropanos at the back with a midfield, or even just our midfield two in that match is Mohamed Elneny and Matteo Guendouzi. There's no creativity, or at least not enough there. So it was the manager's fault, and it was a bigger stretch than he's claiming it was.
Yeah, I'm just looking again at understat, and two of those three games, we didn't even accumulate an expected goals of one or greater. So against Leicester, we only had a 0.60 XG. Against Wolves, only a 0.94. So, I mean, moving beyond, even beyond that Crystal Palace game where we, for some reason, put Carl Jenkinson up against Wilfred Zaha, I mean, just there were some big-time issues in that side. All right, yeah, so... Sorry, go ahead.
Can I just make one more point?
Like, yeah, please do.
Like you said, the XG for the game against Wolves, we were down 3-0 at halftime in that game. It's not like it was a hard-fought match and they scored a late goal. Like, we were just completely outplayed in that span of games. And I don't know how a manager couldn't take any bit of responsibility for that.
Yeah, and it kind of seems like he's trying to shift that blame. But again, like we keep saying, he is looking for a new job. So, you know, we should have expected this sort of a response from him, I guess.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
all right. So let's move on to his next big block quote, and that goes, "At first things went magnificently. There was a good spirit in the dressing room," he begins. "Aaron Ramsey's injury, when he was at his best, had a big influence. He conveyed positivity, so much energy, and playing a lot of important games in April without him, we needed 100% commitment from every player." So the way I'm reading that quote right there is he's basically saying, well, how was I supposed to, you know, do well when Aaron Ramsey was injured? So, Zach, I guess let's stick with you. How crucial was Aaron Ramsey to Arsenal's success that season?
Way too crucial to let him walk away to Juventus at a free transfer. It kind of reminded me of how important he was in the 2013-14 season, having a great season, scored, you know, tons of goals early on, scored that brilliant goal against Liverpool in the 2-0 home win, and then got hurt on Boxing Day, and our season just kind of took a huge downward spiral, and it seemed to do the same thing last season. So he always played a big role in the team, and that's what makes me scratch my head even more that they let him walk.
Yeah, and it seemed like that first half of the season, when he was really, really influential on the team. Obviously, the second half, he kind of, you know, picked up some injuries and all that, as we would expect from an Arsenal midfielder. Chance, how important do you think that Ramsey was to our success that season?
Ramsey, like Zach basically just laid it out, he was very, very, very important. You had the Arsenal fans, like, just biting and begging the board to get him on that new contract, but of course, you know Arsenal, he isn't there anymore. I think the injury to Aaron Ramsey towards the end of the season did hurt us a lot, but Unai Emery, like, putting his justifications for the bad end to the season on just Aaron Ramsey's injury, or at least majorly, I think that's wrong. It was many factors other than that fall back on him. As a manager, you have to at least try your best to adapt to something like that. And, you know, we don't have, you know, an absolutely world-class, star-studded midfield with every player we have, but we do have players that are at least, you know, somewhat okay enough to slot in and do a job. But then Unai Emery just decides, you know, hey, I'm just going to play Carl Jenkinson at right back and Mohamed Elneny right where Ramsey would be. So it's weird. I don't really understand why he made that such a big point. He says, you know, needed 100% commitment from every player. I mean, of course, but it obviously doesn't seem like we got it, and that's another thing that maybe it falls back on both, but it does fall back onto the manager. I think, you know, trying to stress the issue with Ramsey is just, you know, another bullet he's trying to dodge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, on the one hand, you do sort of feel bad. I mean, if you're a manager and your club is not willing to re-sign your arguably your best player, or at the very least your most influential player. But then on the other hand, you know, football is played with 11 players. It's not just the one guy that you have to, you know, that you have to rely on. You have to rely on the entire team and the entire squad in general. So it's one of those quotes where I almost want to feel bad for him, but just, you know, just the disconnect between his words and reality just make it so that I can't really believe him. Is that unfair, Zach, or is that all right that I'm doing that?
No, you're in the right here. You know, we can understand the reason in Emery's tone in this article. Like I said, he's a guy looking for a job. But we can't, just because that's true doesn't mean we get to, you know, sit back and let him say whatever he wants to say without giving him some form of criticism, which he so very much deserves, in my opinion. So I don't think you're being unfair.
Yeah, how about you, Chance?
It's fair to me. I just keep thinking about this man, and I don't know what to say. Things that I might want to say, I can't say. So, you know, seeing the things that he says, I think he deserves all the slack that he's getting.
Gotcha. So after that, Emery moves on to discussing the Europa League final. He says, "In Baku, Chelsea were better. I accept that. In the second half, Eden Hazard made the difference. Preparations were good and everyone was committed. But some players had a mentality that says one day yes, one day no. Excuse me. When in football, it has to be yes, yes, yes every day. We lacked that little extra to get through a lot of games in those final weeks. If your application and commitment falls below 100%, you can lose, and that's what happened." So, I guess, Zach, let's start with you. So, when I'm reading this, specifically where he said, some players had a mentality that one day says yes, one day says no, but then right before that he said preparations were good and everyone was committed, that sounds like double talk. He's literally saying, you know, oh yeah, I prepared the players, but then, you know, the players weren't fully committed. That's almost how I'm reading it. How are you reading it?
Yeah, the same way. He's contradicting himself there. And think about it in a term of, you know, you want to take yourself out of sports and think about, you know, yourself going to work. You don't feel motivated today. And whose job is it to get you motivated to put in your best effort at work? I would go ahead and say it's the boss above you. Not to say that there's not some sort of self-responsibility, but if he just straight up said, you know, some of the players, you know, didn't have the commitment, that was it. But like you said, he went back and contradicted himself almost immediately. So I'm not sure which side I should, you know, I should believe from him, really.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, every player has a responsibility to get themselves up for a game and get themselves motivated, but at the same time, you know, he's a head coach or a manager. I believe his title is head coach, though. Either way, it's part of their job description to get these players motivated. So, you know, it almost seems like, yeah, he's sort of pushing the blame. Chance, is that how you read it or nah?
He's definitely pushing the blame, at least somewhat. I have to agree with all those points. I mean, when he says, you know, preparations were good and everyone was committed, but there shouldn't be a but. As a manager, if you see that something is up, if you see that a player is a one day yes, one day no, it's your job to get in there and try and motivate the player as best you can. It looks like he just kind of left things how they were, and look what happened, you know. I think that Unai Emery, I don't understand. It feels like a bit of, I don't want to say neglect, but there's a hint of it, you know, where he isn't, you know, stepping in. and he's contradicting himself here because I think he's realized that and he's trying to go back on his mistake, but he can't. You know, just like he said, I could say, one day yes, one day no. What Unai Emery's looking like is just one sentence yes, one sentence no, right after the other. It's something we've seen constantly, and we're not even that far in the article. I mean, this really falls on him. This is one of the most hard-hitting things, in my opinion. When I read it, it kind of hits me a little bit, because you know you see all these coaches in the Premier League. You see a lot of let's say Claudio Ranieri back in the 2015-16 season with Leicester. That was an example of a coach that you know the players are always up for. He stepped in if it was needed. Obviously, you know that title-winning season, you'd hope that the players were motivated to go all the way, but you know. They're all human too. Sometimes they may not be, but it has to be the coach that steps in and fixes that. And Claudio Ranieri is a great example of that. Everybody loved him, and he loved everybody, and he used that to his advantage. And, you know, perhaps that was one of the reasons why Leicester won the league. It was that spirit that Unai Emery didn't give to the side that Ranieri did in terms of Leicester. I think all in all, this little section is just... You know, if I could sum it up in one word, it'd just be Unai Emery's, I don't even know what to say. I the first word that comes to my mind is just neglect.
Yeah, I think neglect is sort of a good word for it. So I was sort of thinking about this the other day. You know, on the one hand, we did do a bit better against some of the other top six clubs in the league, at least. But then, you know, we get to Baku and the club just falls apart. And it almost, you know, entering that game, I almost thought to myself, well, it seems like Unai Emery is more of like a quote-unquote big game manager. And basically what I mean by that is he'll identify the most important fixtures coming up on the fixtures list and really get the team up for that. And you know, prepare his team at the very least to negate what the other club is doing. But then in Baku, it seems like he didn't even do that. So I guess I just wanted to, Chance, let's start with you. Do you think that Emery was one of those managers who was a little bit more focused on the big games rather than the little ones? Whereas, you know, Arsene Wenger, I think he was one of those who just said that the most important game coming up was the next game on the fixtures list.
I think, there's not much to argue otherwise. I think... Maybe his head was a bit more screwed on for those top six games. It's like let's take Valencia, you know, one of his former teams. Saying, you know, maybe Valencia did better against the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Sociedad, Villarreal, all those teams. But then, you know, bottled it against the likes of Almeria and Mallorca. You know, it's one of those things where Unai Emery has to take the approach of each game at a time, which I don't think he did. And I think that's very exemplified in Baku, where, you know, even if it was, you know, this big game, look what happened. I think it was more of he wanted to be a big game player, maybe to, I don't know, stand out to the fans. You know, look at the 4-2 win against Tottenham. I think that really got a lot of fans on his side at first, and I think he wanted to carry that more instead of focusing on, Arsenal season, which, as a manager, you do not want. Your job is to, you know, bring success to the club and its results and all that. It's not like, you know, a Paul Pogba fest where it's all about you. So I think, yet again, a lot of it just falls on Emery's mentality.
Yeah, how about you, Zach? Do you think that maybe Emery was a little bit too focused on the big games rather than the little ones? Or do you think that maybe he was just completely clueless? Or maybe both?
I think there's a little bit of both in there. I think his mentality on going up against the small clubs was wrong. Instead of telling his players what they can do to beat this team, instead of motivating his players to tell them how much better they are than a smaller club, he was always picking out, and not that you shouldn't do this, but to the extent that he was doing it, seems like it was too far. And he was picking out, you know, the absolute best qualities of each individual in the opposition and focusing on them and hammering those qualities into his players' minds, so that by the time they got to the match to go up against a side that they should be beating, they're a little bit scared because their manager has convinced them that they are these world-class players, when really they're only, you know, utilizing these quote-unquote world-class skills for a small percentage of the time. I think he scared the team into going up against smaller clubs. But when you got up against a big club, those players don't need the motivation then. They know that that's already there. You know, for a North London derby, if you're not already up for that, we can't help you. Manchester United's the same. Chelsea's the same. Those big matches, those players are getting up themselves. It's the little matches that the manager has to do a little bit more work, and he clearly wasn't that good at it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I definitely can't argue with that. It seems like if you go back and watch some of these replays from the matches against the smaller teams, a pattern emerged where for the first at least 20 minutes or so, we would almost stay inside of our shell and basically say to the other club, hey, please don't hurt us. You know, we almost look scared a little bit. Chance, do you think that holds true? Do you think we were a little bit over-prepared for the qualities of these smaller clubs, or do you think that it was something else?
I'd have to agree. Maybe it wasn't the only thing, but I think that was a big thing. I do have to agree with the fact that Arsenal, they always did look, you know, we always looked scared. We always looked, you know, to submit to the other team and just let them come at us. You know, that's one of the reasons why we, you know, concede a million shots a game in that season. You know, we just kept having them hit at us and hit at us. And 99% of the time, it cost us the match. Take basically that big chunk in April. It's hard to understand from an outsider's perspective why Unai Emery would let this happen, but of course you do see what he's doing. I think he was trying, you know, you look at Unai Emery, it's hard to understand him sometimes, so maybe, you know, trying to, you know, relate to his players the qualities of the opposition and their players, maybe he was trying to say, okay, here is what these guys are good at, watch out for it. But then what? How do we combat that? The players looked like they were clueless themselves going up against those kind of players. Even if those world-class skills, like you said, were used for just a small percentage of the time.
Gotcha. So it almost feels like Emery didn't really convey enough leadership. And that sort of segues pretty good into his next big quote, and that goes, people were happy, but something was missing. I told the people running the club, and then there were decisions that didn't go well. Mistakes were made, and as coach, I take responsibility for mine. We can talk about that in a little bit. For example, all four captains left. Ramsey had decided he was going. It would have been better for the team if he had continued, and for me. Peter Cech was retiring, fine, but I wanted Lauren Koscielny to stay, Nacho Monreal to stay. All those leaders went, which makes the dressing room something else. So obviously, you know, entering into the new season, the Lauren Koscielny's decision to go on strike was, you know, I can't really understate how embarrassing that was for a club. And I mean, obviously we don't really have access to the Arsenal dressing room, so we don't know exactly how that affected the players, but it couldn't have affected them positively. So, Zach, do you think that there was some issues in that leadership group? Do you think it was really harmful for the club to lose all those leaders? Do you think it was harmful for Emery to lose all those leaders? What are you thinking?
I think this is where the club came into trouble adjusting in the post-Arsene Wenger era and who the kind of hierarchy at the club was, because the club kind of lacked an identity. When Wenger was there, he was always like the front man, and you knew that if you had a question about Arsenal, you knew, the press knew which person they were going to ask. Right now, we're like, well, do we ask... Then it was, do we ask Emery? Do we ask the board that's in charge? Do we, like, it? The club really kind of lacked an identity on the outside and clearly from within. The fact that Lauren Koscielny was willing to go on strike and ruin his legacy with the club, his relationship with the fans, just to get a move away, shows that there was something wrong. Whether it was the manager himself or whether it was, you know, the board that oversees the club. I don't know where the disconnect was, but that was not acceptable. But do you really blame the player? If he saw problems that big and, you know, said, I want to leave, and then, boom, they're getting ready to come over to the U.S., and he said, all right, that I've had it. I'm not going. You guys aren't granting me my wish. I've given you service for, what, 9-10 seasons? Like, and they didn't allow it. So there's a problem there with the club's identity from within. You know, the same with Nacho Monreal leaving. Yeah, we shouldn't really keep three left backs on the books, especially ones that are earning pretty high wages. But we sold Nacho Monreal for $275,000. Like, we didn't get $500,000 for this guy. Was that sale really that necessary? If the manager wanted it, these are the, remember, it's the same people that brought in this manager. It's not like Emery was brought in by a different group and then these guys took over and they're like, okay, we're willing to give you a shot, but we're going to do things our way. No. They brought him in. And, you know, if it's true that he's saying, you know, I want these players to stay, I want this guy, and the board is just kind of like, well, that's fine, but it's not going to happen, then why did they bring him in the first place?
That's a very good question. Thoughts, Chance?
I mean, yeah, I'd have to agree. A lot of it does come from within and does come from the board. He really, you know, wanted these certain players to stay, let's say, but, you know, they didn't. But I think when you compare Unai Emery and what he did to Arsene Wenger and what he did, Arsene Wenger, you know, the reason why he was that, you know, man up in the front, that reliable person you could go to about these kind of things, he was pushing all the time to get things done the way he wanted them to get done. And I don't think Unai Emery had the cojones to do that. I think he was very just like the way I think it's the way he acts is the way like Arsenal plays, very very submissive. No matter what he tried to do, he you know, just kept getting beat down, and he didn't push for, you know, what he may have wanted. And let's say, you know, he did, you know, maybe having Koscielny at least not leave the way he did, Nacho Monreal staying, pushing for that Aaron Ramsey contract, these things that he wanted but he didn't get as a manager and as a someone who has such a high position at this football club, you have to push for these things and, you know, try and get the board on your side. You don't want a manager that, you know, the board isn't, you know, on the same wavelength with. Sorry. I think that the real leader in this club that was lacking was the manager, despite all these leaders leaving the club as players.
Yeah, and I just wanted to get your thoughts about specifically Nacho Monreal. I mean, from what this quote reads, it sounds like Monreal was a player that Emery really wanted to keep around at the club, but yeah, like Zach said, we gave him away literally for a handful of peanuts. So does that basically mean that the board was not backing Emery even last summer, and they were sort of already had one eye on the future, thinking, oh, who are we going to get to replace this guy? Or do you think there was something else at play here?
I think that was a bit apparent how, you know, it looked like they were already considering getting him out the door. A lot of fans thought that he would be sacked after the disappointing end to the season. But, you know, they gave him another chance, and he blew it. But I do think that for a long time, the board weren't on his side. I think that's obvious. I don't think anyone could argue otherwise. I don't understand how Unai Emery, you know, let Monreal not go for maybe at least, let's say, you know, $500,000 or even $1 million. Yeah, he's aging on a bit, and he's a player, you know, that we, you know, ended up getting a replacement left back as Kieran Tierney later in the summer. But, you know, this is a time of uncertainty, and seeing these, you know, well-respected players leaving, yeah, it's definitely something that spawned from a conflict between Emery and the board.
So, Zach, I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Does you know, Monreal leaving, does that dictate that the board wasn't backing Emery, or do you think they had given up on him by then? How do you read into that situation?
I don't see that one as the board not backing Emery, but everything as a whole, if he's really saying, if he was going to the board and saying, we need to sign Aaron Ramsey to a new contract, we need to make sure that we keep Nacho Monreal, you know, we need to do these things, and if they're doing none of them, it seems like yeah, they're probably not backing him. And I know we'll get onto it in a few minutes, but the same thing happened, you know, with the beginning of the season with the wingers that Arsenal had the option to buy, who Emery wanted and who the club got. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit further down the road.
Yeah, actually, we may as well get into it now, because the next quote has everything to do about transfers. It goes, "We signed Nicolas Pepe. He's a good player, but we didn't know his character, and he needs time, patience. I favored someone who knew the league and wouldn't need to adapt. Wilfried Zaha won games on his own. Tottenham, Manchester City, us. Incredible performances. I told them, this is the player I know and want. I met Zaha and he wanted to come. The club decided Pepe was one for the future. I said, yes, but we need to win now, and this lad wins games. He beat us on his own." So he's basically saying, well, you know, I wanted to buy this player because he hurt us, and so, you know, if we bought him, not only would he not hurt us, he would hurt these other guys, but then what did the club do? We went and we signed Nicola Pepe instead. So I guess, Zach, it sounded like you had some thoughts about this one.
Yeah, so I have bad thoughts on Emery and on the board for the same problem here, which is fun. One, Unai Emery, in this instance, it seems like it was a little bit short-sighted, kind of just like when we signed Socrates, we signed Henrik Mkhitaryan. We're signing players that are older to get us back into the Champions League. They thought, all right, let's not go from point A to point B to point C to get to the Champions League. Let's skip a few things. Let's skip a few steps and get there right away. So the short-sightedness in wanting Wilfried Zaha is a problem for a couple different reasons. But then if you think about, you know, Unai Emery going to the Arsenal board and saying, I want a winger who plays on the left-hand side, who is a right-footed player, who has Premier League experience. And they say, okay, we're going to get you someone from a Farmers League who plays on the right-hand side, who is a left-footed player. There's just no communication between Unai Emery and the people above him. They're not even close to being on the same page. Wanting a right-footed winger to play on the left and signing a left-footed winger to play on the right, how did we get so far apart from how they wanted to build this team?
Yeah, I guess the only real answer is that there was a disconnect between what Emery wanted and what the board wanted. So, Chance, I just wanted your thoughts about the Zaha not transfer, I guess, is what we'll call it.
Yeah, I mean, Zach was spot on with the, you know, left-footed right-winger, right-footed left-winger debacle there. But I think even then, with that disconnect, I think if I had to choose a side here, looking at, you know, what they both wanted as a whole, I'd have to side with the board a little bit against Unai Emery. Emery wanted the here, the now, not even worrying about the later, which is something that, as a club like Arsenal, in need of a rebuild, that's the one thing that, at least now, we are looking for, that we should have been looking for back then. I think Nicola Pepe it will definitely prove to, you know, be pivotal to our future as he adapts. Unai Emery seemed to be worried about that and just didn't want to deal with it. Zaha is in his mid to late 20s. And let's say we did sign him for that big fee, that $80 million, not too much higher than Pepe's fee. I think, you know, give it a few years, he'll slowly start to, you know, be past his best. And then we have a player like Nicola Pepe, let's say, you know, oh, in this Farmers League, he starts impressing more and more and more than that one huge season at Lille that he had. Maybe he, you know, secures a move to a big club in the Premier League. And he proves to, you know, dust us week in, week out. I think that the board had a little bit of vision into the future here, which I think is a good thing. But obviously the disconnect between what they wanted and Unai Emery wanted, the fact that they couldn't at least come to some sort of, you know, middle mark, you know, some sort of agreement, I think that was a big problem.
Yeah, so the way that I was reading into things was, so basically, before Sanjehi gained, you know, as much influence as he had at the club, that's when we saw, you know, Mkhitaryan come in. I think Sanjehi started his role in February of 18, so right after that January window where we sold Sanchez, brought in Mickey, you know, brought in Alba, and then that next summer is when the Zaha thing happened. So, I mean, from the big picture, I agree with you, Chance. It seemed like the board was saying, all right, we need to start securing players who are a bit younger, rather than, you know, it seemed like for a while there, one requirement for signing for Arsenal is that you had to be exactly 29 years old, you know, whereas Pepe, I believe, was 24 when we signed him. So, yeah, I agree completely. It seemed like the board was basically saying, well, look, Emery, you're only looking at this next season. We're looking at, you know, 2-3 years down the line as well as 5 years down the line. So, you know, it seemed like, at least for me, it was probably the right decision to bring in Pepe. Zach, how about you? Do you think it was a mistake to not bring in Zaha? Do you think it was a mistake to bring in Pepe? What are you thinking?
You know, I think that Pepe was probably the right decision. Looking at the stats, you know, four goals and six assists for Pepe in the current campaign is definitely lower than we expected. But Wilfred Zaha has 3 goals and 5 assists. So there's nothing to say that Wilfred Zaha would have been much better. And like Chance said, you know, the sell-on fee, the potential sell-on fee for Pepe was something at the time that was attractive. You know, a 24-year-old, by the time at the end of this contract, should be, you know, still in his prime, and we could either re-sign him or sell him for a huge fee. With Zaha, there was no opportunity to do that with the player already being 27 years old. So I think that we did make the right decision.
Gotcha. And sticking with you, Zach, do you think the fact that the board went with Pepe instead of Zaha, is that sort of a sign that they were already thinking about the next manager after Emery? Or do you think it was just they wanted to keep Emery, but at the same time they said to him, hey, you know, you're not technically a manager, you're just a head coach, so you're gonna take what you're given?
I wish I could say that were the case, but we clearly had nothing set in motion, no plan set in place when we fired Emery, and it took us a couple of weeks to bring in Arteta, and we were using, you know, team doctors as coaches in warm-ups. So it would seem so on the surface, but when you look deeper to the rest of the running of the club, it doesn't seem that way.
Gotcha. How about you, Chance? Do you think I was reading into things just a bit too much, or do you think that was sort of a sign of the growing rift between the board and Emery at that last summer?
I think that it could be a sign there. I don't think it was exactly a matter of, you know, they're already looking past Emery full term. I think maybe after that season and around that time where, you know, the distance between what they wanted and their agreements was just growing bigger and bigger apart. I think maybe they had their doubts, and maybe they were thinking, you know, maybe, hey, during the course of this next season, we might have to end up looking for other candidates. But it looked like, but they did still give Unai Emery a chance. And I think that that's kind of what gives me the no. I think the board, if they were really looking for, you know, life past Emery, I think they would have, you know, gotten to that life a bit sooner.
Gotcha. I guess especially since how poorly they ended last season, and even entering into the summer, how sour things were around the club. It seems like, yeah, if they did have a long-term view to get rid of him, like so many fans seem to think, they probably would have just pulled the trigger last summer. So getting back to the article, after that bit about Zaha, Emery does return back to Ramsey, basically saying that, you know, he sort of suggests that, you know, the club should have re-signed him, but I feel like we kind of did everything that we already said everything that we wanted to say about Ramsey. So was there anything else that you guys wanted to say about that situation or no?
I think I got it all out.
Gotcha. Yeah, all right.
I'd kind of have to say the same. Mostly just, you know, the words about, you know, Emery still having to push for that contract signing and all that. I don't think there's really much more to say about Ramsey.
Yeah, I think we, us as well as other podcasts, have about beaten that one to death. All right, so let's move on to Granit Xhaka. He has a little bit to say about that situation. Emery says, "I believe Xhaka could be captain, and the players voted for him. He was respected, in the dressing room. But why vote? That's not part of the quote. The next quote is, my strategy was 50% me, 50% them. I like to have players' input, their opinion. There were people with the character to be captain, but you need time and backing. Without the support of certain people or the fans, it's harder. If Xhaka had Koscielny and Nacho or Ramsey, he could have eased into it. Emotionally, certain results and attitudes inside didn't help the team have the commitment and togetherness of before." So I'm not sure if we quite spoke on this on the pod, but I guess I'll start with you, Zach. What did you think about having the vote for a captain and basically going a few weeks or even it was about 2 months, I think, that we didn't technically have a captain between Koscielny leaving and Xhaka being elected? So did you think that was a good thing that Emery, you know, wanted the input of the players, or do you think that maybe shows a lack of cojones, to use Chance's words?
Yeah, I think the lack of cojones makes sense. Listen, if Unai Emery wanted to have a vote, that's one thing. But do it right away. You have to be diligent about it. We went so long without having a confirmed captain for this club. If you, like, right when Koscielny left, if that's it, we need a captain, and you think that you want to have a vote, do it. Didn't seem that way. It seemed like he couldn't make his decision. The press was kind of on the idea that Xhaka shouldn't be the captain. The fans were kind of on that idea, and Emery was drawn into that, saying that, oh, you know, I want it to be 50% me and 50% the players. Well, the players outnumber you, so their 50% is going to outweigh what you're doing. So you need to take more control than 50% of control in your dressing room. So there's several problems with what he's saying there.
Gotcha. How about you, Chance? Do you think it's an issue, or do you kind of like the idea of a 50-50 split?
I understand why he would do it, because, you know, the captain is supposed to represent the team as a whole. But I think, you know, this is something we rarely see, and there's a reason why. You always see the managers choosing these captains themselves 100% instead of this 50-50 nonsense. I think a part of it was there was maybe a bit of uncertainty in his mind as to who, you know, Emery wanted as captain. So I think he may have, you know, tried to just push it onto the players a bit, like, hey, who do you guys want? You know, instead of looking at his squad and, you know, seeing those captain-like qualities himself, if there were any players that had any. I see the part of the quote where, you know, if Xhaka had Koscielny and Nacho or Ramsey, could have eased into it. Maybe. But you know, reality shows that he didn't. And I think as a manager, if that's what you think, if you think that, you know, the players that we don't have anymore could have helped the person that not only you but your own squad chose as a captain, you know, help him advances one, I think there is a problem there. I don't think there's much vision on the present looks like he's kind of dwelling on the past there. There's a lot of things with Unai Emery where he just dwells on a lot of things that just aren't reality, and it twists his words, and it twists my opinion on him. So I guess the whole, all in all, the whole 50-50 thing and how it panned out and what Unai Emery's mentality seems to be, I just don't understand it.
Yeah, he keeps coming back to saying, you know, oh, if we had, you know, Monreal, or if Ramsey stuck around. It seems like he almost felt like he was almost powerless to control what happened. So is that sort of the feeling that you're getting, Chance, or am I reading into things a little bit too deeply?
I mean, I do think that at least Unai Emery must have felt that he didn't have a lot of power. But as such a big head, head at the club, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Part of your job is to push for what you want and try and get it, just like Arsene Wenger did. I wouldn't be surprised if Emery did just come out and say, you know, yep, felt like I had no power, and he did kind of say that a little bit, you know, a little bit later in the article, but we'll get to that in a little. But yeah, I do think that is the case. I don't think you're really going too far with that one.
Gotcha. Any last thoughts on that one, Zach?
No, you guys covered it.
Gotcha. All right, so let's move on. Next up, Emery decided to discuss Mesut Ozil. I mean, I think we all remember the little tiff that the two of them had. Emery said, "I spoke a lot with Ozil. He has to be self-critical too. Analyze his attitude and commitment. I tried with all my might to help Ozil. Throughout my career, talented players have reached their best level with me. I was always positive, wanting him to play, be involved." So when I read that, I don't know what the heck he's talking about. I mean, first of all, throughout his career, talented players have reached their best level with him. I'm not quite sure if that's true. I mean, maybe if you go back to his Valencia days, I believe that's when he had the likes of Juan Mata and David Silva at the club, who, you know, I guess maybe he got the best out of them. But if you look at PSG, I don't think that he got the best out of Neymar. In fact, I don't think that anybody can really get the best out of Neymar aside from Neymar. And I mean, certainly, well, during Emery's time at Arsenal, Ozil, when he did play, he just wasn't really getting the results the results on the pitch. I mean, there was that stat going around not too long ago about how it had been, what, a full calendar year since Ozil has scored a goal. Zach, what do you think? Do you think that Emery has a history of getting talented players reaching their best level under him? And if so, did he get that out of Ozil?
Certainly not. He definitely does not have the history of getting the best out of players, like you said with Neymar. Just because you played well in the league doesn't mean anything. And was Emery in charge at PSG when Monaco won the league?
That was his first season.
So of course, yeah, you got the best out of your players in a league that your team spends all the money in the world, and you couldn't win the league. I understand that Monaco had a really talented young team there, but he's not getting the best out of these players. He's not getting the best out of Mesut Ozil. He never was. What game did we have for Ozil that was, you know, really good under Unai Emery? The Leicester City game at home, and then that was it. He's just so delusional that it's tough to wrap my head around. If he would have said one of these things, I would have been like, well, I can see where you're coming from. But this all together in one interview is really making me scratch my head.
Yeah, not even just in one interview, but back to back to back like that. You know, first it's, oh, Ozil has to be self-critical. Oh, I get the best out of my players. Oh, I always wanted Ozil to play. Well, those are three sort of contradicting statements right there.
Yeah.
Chance, for you, is Emery a guy who gets the best out of his players?
Nope. I remember reading it this morning, and when I saw that, I couldn't help but just think to myself, what is he saying? That's just not true. He, at least for, you know, the likes of Arsenal and PSG, he couldn't do that. And despite all his efforts, you know, him saying this, you know, doesn't make a difference to me. With Ozil, the one good game that I remember him having was that Leicester game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than that, You see Ozil, he doesn't score, rarely assists, and his work rate isn't that good. You always see Ozil, you know, just being slow around. It's not the Ozil that we saw, you know, when he arrived. You know, it's not like the 15-16 Ozil that we thought we'd have for years to come. It's this version of Ozil that Unai Emery, despite what he's saying, always wanted him to play. Perhaps, maybe he did want Ozil to play, and maybe it does fall back on Ozil a little bit. You know, you saw his, you know, his various reasons why he couldn't play. You know, whether he was hurt or ill, or, you know, streaming Fortnite on Twitch. I think that, I think that you know, maybe it does fall back on Ozil, but I think Emery didn't try hard enough to, you know, get Ozil on track. Ozil's been off track for quite a while, and I don't think Unai Emery made that any better. And I don't think he could make it any better for any other player as well.
Yeah, it seems like Ozil's not the sort of player that you can take a hard line with and get the best out of him. You know, when during that 15-16 season under Wenger, when Wenger got so much from Ozil, it seemed like he did that by basically giving Ozil just what he wanted. Oh, you don't want to go to Stoke on a rainy Tuesday night? Well, you don't have to. Oh, you don't want to, you know, take on the responsibility of being a captain, even though you're clearly the most talented player? All right, you don't have to. Whereas Emery, he sort of almost wanted to motivate Ozil in a different way. Instead of just giving in to his demands, he sort of said, he tried to at first say, this is the way that things are going to go, and if you don't fall in line, you're just not going to play. And he kept that line until, well, things started to fall apart. Then he sort of went back to Ozil. So I guess if you could just talk a little bit more, does Ozil need to be a little bit more self-critical and maybe stop being quite so much of a diva behind the scenes? Or do you think that Emery not getting the most of Ozil was more down to Emery than Ozil?
I mean, I think it's a bit of both. I think Ozil, I've seen him, and I think he does, you know, maybe need some more self-criticalness and some more self-discipline. But, you know, we've said it so many times. If it isn't going to be Ozil who does it all on his own, who was going to be the man to spur him on? It had to be Emery, and he didn't do that.
Gotcha. So, Zach, I wanted your thoughts, too. How self-critical should Ozil be, or was it all Emery's fault that Ozil didn't really reach his best levels?
Ozil should be as critical on himself, as hard on himself as any other player is, but not any more, not any less. I think that there's a lot expected of him, and he hasn't been a leader in any way, but throughout his career, he's just not that type of person. He doesn't have that that leadership DNA. So we're expecting everything, you know, on the pitch. And remember, Ozil would get criticized in the media even when he was having brilliant games, because he was kind of going under the radar and playing football a different way. He's not always that flashy attacking player that you like to see, but he finds the right pass. His vision is incredible. So I think a lot of the criticism he's received throughout his career has been a little harsh, but He should be as critical on himself as any other player is, but Unai Emery failed to get the best out of his players, and Ozil wasn't the only one.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like quite a lot of the club, or quite a lot of the players couldn't quite reach their top level, their top gear. So again, it's just sort of, it reads like Emery basically saying to clubs, hey, come and get me.
Yeah, for real.
All right, so I guess let's move past Ozil, and let's move on to his next quote. That is, a coach has to have the strength to take responsibility to be in the firing line. I protect the players, and the club protects the manager. I'm a club man, that's why they signed. With Arsene Wenger, it was different. He did everything. Now there's Raul and Edu, and I have to trust them to do their job. My job's the football. The people who handle other stuff, although that impacts on the pitch, some of that hurt us. So I'm not, this is sort of a classic Emery quote, because I think I know what he's talking about, but I'm not quite sure. It almost sounds like he was saying, hey, you know, I'll take responsibility for the bad results on the pitch, but I need some protection from the board, basically. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, Zach, but it seems like Arsene Wenger didn't really get board protection, so is it normal for Arsenal just to not back their the person in charge of the first team, or was it maybe something about Emery that they said, oh, we need to see what this guy's made out of, or what was going on there?
I think that, well, I don't think Arsene Wenger needed board backing. I think he was strong enough to do it. He had been doing the job quite long enough to be able to handle any criticism he was receiving from any which direction. But Unai Emery saying he wasn't protected is mind-blowing to me, considering the fact that when results were going sour this season, early this season, before he was sacked, the club put out a statement saying that we were just hearing noise from the fans and not to pay attention to it, and they backed Unai Emery. I don't know what the hell he's talking about, honestly. I cannot figure it out, because the club came out and criticized the fans for being critical of the manager. That is not something a club should ever do, and they did it for Unai Emery. So saying he wasn't protected by Arsenal, I can't wrap my head around.
Yeah. I don't really remember the last time before Unai Emery came to the club that anyone from the board would come out publicly and really say anything at all. I mean, Silent Stan was very silent under Wenger. Now after he left, we've seen a little bit more of him, but a lot more of Josh Kroenke, who kept coming out and saying, hey, fans, get excited. You know, that's when the club wasn't telling us to shush. Chance, do you think Emery was properly protected by the club?
I think, you know, protection was there, obviously, you know, being defended by the board due to the fans' backlash. Otherwise, maybe not so much, and I think that's what cost him his job. They did, you know, give him maybe the reassurance of a second chance when maybe he didn't deserve it, and it shows he didn't during that second season. But if you compare him to the likes of Arsene Wenger, he took everything that came his way, and there was really nobody there to protect him like Raul and Edu have, you know. Emery, you know, the limited job he had compared to the likes of Arsene Wenger, who did essentially anything and everything, anything that he could do, I think Emery has to come under a lot more scrutiny, and I don't think that the board, you know, maybe babied him. I don't think the board was, you know, entirely, you know, going at him either. I think he did have some level of protection, but I don't think it was much, and I don't think it was needed.
Gotcha. And I also just want to talk a little bit more about one specific line from that last quote, and that was when he said, "I protect the players, and the club protects the manager." Up to this point in the interview, we heard about how Ozil needs to be more self-critical. Xhaka didn't have the right leadership characteristics, even though he was captain. And, you know, he sort of also implied that Koscielny maybe didn't do the right thing on his end. It doesn't sound like he was really protecting the players too much to me. Am I wrong, Chance? Or is he maybe being a little bit hypocritical here, saying, oh, I need to be insulated from criticism, but then in the next breath criticizing the players when he says, you know, that he should be protecting them?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely hypocritical. I think it's like he forgets what he's saying sometimes, and he just goes with, like, you know, the most opposite thing from these last statements. The fact he says, I protect the players, it really doesn't seem like it when you're criticizing a lot of your big-name players. Like you said, I think that if a coach were to, you know, openly do stuff like that, you know, these players represent the club as much as you do and as the board does. You have to be in a big alliance with them, and even if you're not at the club anymore saying this kind of stuff, it's been in your mind since you were there. And if this were to maybe come out sooner and as big of statements as they are, I wouldn't be, I, you know, if I were the board, I wouldn't protect them, and I wouldn't be expected to protect them either. So, you know, him putting these expectations on the board, despite not meeting the expectations he literally puts on himself in this quote, it's just, it's disgraceful.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Zach? Do you agree there?
Yeah, he's saying, you know, I got, my job is to protect the players, and this is why this player was wrong, and this player didn't give it all, and this player should have done this. That's not protecting the players in any fashion.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree more. It just, you know, we keep coming back to this. There's a what's the word? A cognitive disconnect between his words and what's actually happening around him. And he's trying so hard to spin things his way, but it's just so obvious that he's wrong. It's really frustrating. All right, so to move on with the article, I just really wanted to really quick touch on this, because probably my favorite part of Unai Emery at the club was listening to him say good evening at the start of every single press conference. So he went on to say, when results are bad, it's not the same. You lack the linguistic depth to explain and take good evening. Okay, it's good evening. But when I say good evening, and one, it was fun. When we were losing, it was a disgrace. So I just basically wanted to, you know, when I heard that, I said, yeah, well, that was my favorite part of you at the club. So, guys, I just wanted your thoughts. Zach, what was your favorite part of Unai Emery at the club?
I'd have to say good evening. I agree wholeheartedly. I never thought of that as a disgrace. I never thought of it as a reason. And I know that there were several people on Twitter that did it this way, where, you know, this guy, you know, we need a coach who can come in here and speak English. He doesn't even know how to say good evening, which is a ridiculous sentiment to even bring to the table. But still, to this day, me and my brothers have a group chat, and the name of that group chat is Good Evening. Because nice. I love, no matter what, win, lose. You know, there was the one time specifically where the reporter asks him a question. He's like halfway through his response, and then he realizes he forgot to say it and says it in the middle of a sentence. And I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, yeah. Probably my favorite part of it is that anytime, you know, he would always say it right at the beginning of the first response to a question. Uh-huh. But it always seemed like he was waiting for it. Like the reporter was talking. You could tell Emery was, you know, sort of half listening. And then as soon as the guy stops talking, Emery just goes, he almost exhales it. Good evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you guys really didn't show up tonight. The team performed really poorly. What are your thoughts on the match? Yeah, good evening. He was just ready. He was ready always to say it. And I loved it.
How about you, Chance? How much did you enjoy that?
It was the only thing I liked about Unai Emery, and I have to agree on how, you know, it was like he was just waiting on it, you know, how it was just, it could literally be an interview in the press in the morning time, and he would still probably say good evening. Like, it's just one of those little funny things that kind of takes you away from all the bad you see in Unai Emery. But, like, yeah, I mean, what else is there to really like about him looking back? Good evening. That's about it.
Just about. And Chance, I just wanted your thoughts on the language barrier as a whole. I mean, we know that coming into the job, he didn't really speak much English. He spoke a few other languages, Spanish, obviously. We know he spoke French. I think I heard somewhere that he speaks maybe Italian or something. So, you know, he is good linguistically, but he had to basically learn English specifically for this job. And I mean, if we sort of look back, it seemed as though there was a disconnect between Emery's words and the actions of the team. And then, of course, after he left, there was when Socrates and I think one or two other players came out and said, yeah, we just didn't really know what the heck this guy wanted. Do you think that the language barrier hindered Emery at all?
I mean, when you have our own players, you know, saying that, you know, it hindered them in a way, of course, you know, it hindered the man speaking. I don't think that the language barrier could be, you know, extremely, you know, pivotal to the downfall of Arsenal and the misunderstandings between, you know, everyone involved. Look at Mauricio Pochettino. I think he was in the same way, where he didn't know much English at all when he came on the shores of England. And you see the jobs he did with Southampton and Tottenham. very good jobs, and he basically learned English along the way as well. So I don't think that you know, it was the only barrier between him and the club. Was it a big one? I'd have to say yes, but I don't think it's as, you know, extreme as it's made out to be.
Gotcha. How about you, Zach? Do you think it was a big deal, the language barrier, or do you think that's maybe just a convenient excuse?
I think it's a convenient excuse. I think that, you know, think about the players that we have in the team. Think about how many of them really, you know, they spoke English, but how many of them was English their first language? He was able to communicate in, like you said, in several different languages with these players. So the point should be getting across somehow. So I don't think the language barrier was a problem. I don't think it should keep us from going for foreign managers in the future whose English may not be the best. I just think all in all, the relationship between Unai Emery and the club and the appointment of Unai Emery just didn't turn out to be a success, and we can leave it at that.
Gotcha, gotcha. So moving on, and I think this that what you just said segues pretty well. Emery later goes on in the article to talk about basically how the club was while we were spiraling out of control there at the end of the his only full season at the club. Emery says, the energy slips, things drift, everything does, everyone does. Some support you, but you feel the atmosphere. Relationships shift, and that transmits to the pitch. Losing leads against Palace and Wolves reflected our emotional state. We weren't right. It wasn't working. I told the players, I don't see the team I want. That commitment and unity wasn't there anymore. That's when I see I'm on my own. The club left me alone, and there was no solution. So, again, he's sort of saying, hey, I wasn't insulated. And right after this, he also goes on to outline how Monchi had protected him at Sevilla, at PSG. The owner there, you know, protected him. And again, he wasn't protected at Arsenal, which I think we kind of already touched on that. But it sounds to me like the rest of that statement basically says, oh, when things were out of control, I had no idea what to do. Zach, is that kind of the feeling that you were getting from what he said, or is there something else at play?
Yeah, I mean, this guy went through a little bit of a rough patch at a couple different clubs, and not to say that you should be comfortable going through a rough patch, but you should know what to do in these types of situations, whether or not your club, in your eyes, has backed you, has supported you, has protected you. So it just seems like he didn't know where to go.
Yeah, is that the feeling you were getting as well, Chance?
Yeah, I mean, you can't just, you know, be a football manager. You know, all football managers go through a rough patch at some point in their career with some club, whoever it may be. But these managers are expected to, you know, get them out of that situation themselves. The way he's leaning on the board and, you know, kind of being like, you know, oh, the club, everyone left me alone, you know, that just sounds like, it sounds like a bit of a pity party to me. Like Unai, you're supposed to know what to do in this kind of situation. So the fact that you don't falls on you, it doesn't fall on anyone else. And I don't think he realized that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it basically seems like he almost doesn't understand what his job was. I mean, half of a head coach's job is to right the ship when things are going wrong. I mean, at the top level of football, if everything's going right, the players are playing well, there's great team unity, the head coach almost doesn't need to coach. He basically just needs to go to the players and say, all right, this is the team, this is the formation, you know, this is what we want to do. He doesn't really need to, you know, to really do that much other than what I just said. Whereas, I mean, you're always going to go through a rough patch. I mean, even Liverpool went through a little bit of a rough patch this season. And did Klopp all of a sudden say, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. No, you didn't see that. Whereas with Emery, as soon as, you know, the wheels fell off, all of a sudden his hands are up in the air saying, I don't know what to do. So, Chance, do you think that was basically just why he was unsuccessful at Arsenal? He just couldn't really face adversity? Or was there something else that led to his downfall?
I think that was a big reason for it. You know, the manager's character is one of the biggest things about him. I think that, you know, having this sort of, you know, feeling of helplessness at this level, that's the last thing you want when you're trying to push for success after a lot of disappointment. You know, that Europa League finishes in these Europa League eliminations. That loss at Baku, you know, you see all these things, and you think, you know, it's like Unai Emery didn't think to himself at any point, what can I do? At least not in the sense of trying to figure it out. It's like he was saying, oh, what can I do? I don't know. It seems like he was just, you know, like a dog looking for its home, just lost.
Gotcha. Is that sort of the feeling you were getting as well, Zach? That Emery just didn't really know what to do when things went wrong?
Yes, sir. He just didn't know how to react to the situation, and that was his downfall.
Gotcha. All right, so we're just about at the end of the article here, but a couple of more quotes to get through. First one was, look, I was happy at Arsenal, and I remember the good things. The first year was magnificent. We'll talk on about that in just a minute. I gave opportunities to young players. Bukayo Saka played 8 minutes and never touched the ball, but that was a first step for a 17-year-old who's going to be great. Bernd Leno has grown. Joe Willock, Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah, Gabriel Martinelli, Matteo Guendouzi did well. Lucas Torreira. It's rewarding seeing them grow. And Alba got 31 goals and was top scorer. Lacazette scored 19 and gave 13 assists. All that was missing was Aubameyang scoring that penalty against Tottenham, 2 extra points for Champions League qualification, or beating Brighton and Palace. We couldn't finish the job, and then there were mistakes. I'm self-critical. At certain moments, I couldn't get results. I enjoyed the Emirates. I still follow Arsenal. They're making changes. Arteta was the right choice. I spoke to him around Christmas. I want the best for him and Arsenal. So just like sort of the rest of the article, he's sort of saying one thing and then contradicting himself. I mean, he said, the first year was magnificent, but at the same time, we couldn't, you know, get to you know, qualify for the Champions League, which was our goal. And then, you know, he was also sort of saying all that was missing was Aubameyang scoring that penalty. It sounds like, again, he's trying to shed responsibility when, again, he was responsible for these poor results. So, Zach, is that kind of how you were reading it? Or maybe did you?
Yeah.
Were you able to glean something else from this last bit? What's going on?
No, it's the whole, like, how many times did he say, I'm self-critical, but he didn't actually critique a single thing? Like, he keeps saying, I'm self-critical, but, okay, but tell us, what about you? What was the problem from your point of view? Like, all that was missing, the Aubameyang scoring the penalty? That was in the 8-match unbeaten run. That was the only match that we didn't win. We won 7 and drew the 1, and that was it. It would have been fantastic to win 8 in a row in the Premier League. We're really talking about that. We're saying that, and against, you know, Brighton and Palace. The Brighton, Palace, Wolves, Leicester. A 4-game run where we picked up a single point. It was not about Aubameyang's miss. It was about 3 matches where you conceded 9 goals, and then you followed it up with the draw against Brighton. He's kind of just taken things way out of proportion. Like, at this point, we're saying, well, the loss on the opening day to Man City really ruined it. That's 3 extra points we could have had. So, I don't understand the logic behind it.
Yeah, it's like he's just trying to rewrite history, basically. You know, saying to everyone who's listening, that collapse that you saw, well, that was just the player's fault. It wasn't me. Also, I'm a company man, and I protect the players, so you should hire me. It doesn't make sense.
Yep, I'm self-critical, though.
Yeah, don't you worry about that. I know exactly what my faults are. Chance, how are you? How did you read that last quote there?
It's just, this one, it makes me so frustrated, because it's like you read this first paragraph and you see all these positives that he thinks he got out. He says the first year was magnificent for who? I don't know.
Not the fans.
You know, he went into these younger players, you know, he gave opportunities to young players. And I'll admit, like, okay, understandable how he, you know, tries to bring a positive out of that. You know, Bukayo Saka got his first couple of minutes and now look what he's doing. His breakthrough season, of course, you know, not under Emery, but you see, it takes something. You know, Willock, Nelson, and Nketiah, all these players, you know, he was the manager when Gabriel Martinelli joined, even though it wasn't much of his influence and more of Edu's, he was there, and he gave him his first opportunities. Okay, cool. I understand that, you know? Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, that, you know, top scorer season. Lacazette's phenomenal season as well. But then he's like, but Aubameyang? it's like, I don't get it. How that's like one of the big things for me that just gets me so confused. He says, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had an absolutely amazing season. You know, he got 31 goals. He was top scorer. You know, he played very well in all competitions. But that one penalty, could have given us 2 points.
Yeah, yeah, just the whole article up to this point, I just keep reading it like there's a disconnect between how he sees the world and how the world actually is. And just, I don't know how else to say it. But anyway, that brings us just about to the end of the article. Just one last quote to get through, guys. Emery says, "The desire and energy is there. I'm watching football, learning, and if there's a good project in England, if someone wants me and is prepared to get behind me, I'm available. In England, that identification with your team brings the game alive. It's deeper there, like a church. I was born in San Sebastian, and my team is Real Sociedad. That feeling is in my heart, and that's what you find in England. It's marvelous, the loveliest thing there is." So, just in case the reader didn't already know that this has basically just been a sales pitch as to why somebody should hire him, well, there it is right there in the end. So I just wanted to, I guess let's start with you, Chance. Where do you think Emery's going to get a job next, and also what is the right level for him?
Well, you know, I'm sure plenty of fast food restaurants are hiring in England. I don't know what football club at this point, if they were to read this and have the same opinions as we do, who would hire him? I don't think anyone would. I like how he mentions Real Sociedad. It's like at this last paragraph, these last couple of sentences, he's like, you know, I'm ready to work again. My favorite team is Real Sociedad. That's my hometown club.
Just by the way.
Like, it's like it's definitely like a sales pitch, like he's just putting out an application to Real Sociedad. And then, you know, he goes on to, you know, ends it off with a little positive, like he knows he's screwed up the entire time, you know, that's what you find in England, it's marvelous, it's the loveliest thing there is. It's just another, you know, it's another example of Unai Emery, you know, just back and forth, negative, positive, trying his best to, you know, look good. But as we have seen so much throughout this this article, and the reader will agree, he has not looked good. So I think if any football club were to hire him, they would have just not looked at his CV at all.
Yeah, or at least a big football club. I mean, I tried to be trying to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. After all, if you were just fired from a job and you were looking for a job in that same industry, what are you going to say to future employers? Oh, well, geez, I really screwed up that last job, or I guess the last two jobs. He didn't really do the best of job at PSG. But at the same time, I feel like he has found success at a few clubs he's been to. Obviously, Valencia, he did a good job there. Sevilla as well. So, but then it, you know, he really ran into problems at Spartak Moscow, as well as PSG and Arsenal. So, to me, it seems like he shouldn't be hired by a big, big club with Champions League aspirations. And at the same time, I guess, you know, over in Russia, things are just very different there compared with Spain. So you know, I'm not sure if we're going to see him, working at a KFC anytime soon. But I really don't think that we're going to see him at the highest levels anymore. And to be honest, I think a club sort of the size of Real Sociedad, that would make a decent fit for him, especially, you know, a Spanish club. So that way, you know, he at the very least wouldn't be able to use the language barrier as an excuse. But, Zach, I wanted your take on it. Where do you think we're going to see Unai Emery work again, and what is the right level for him?
Well, I don't think it'll be Real Sociedad because, you know, looking at the La Liga table, they currently sit in fourth place. So they do have those Champions League aspirations, at least this season. You know, we'll be pulling for Nacho Monreal. But mid-table in Spain, maybe a little higher up the table, you know, a Europa League type aspiration for the club, I think, would fit in pretty well there. I think his next job will come in Spain. I really don't see him working in England. I can't think of a club that would offer him a job in England right now. It just didn't work out. He should have finished higher than he did. Should have finished, what, third, and we finished fifth. So,
yeah,
and, you know, the margin in that was, you know, you can look specifically at the end of the season and how he stumbled across the line and didn't get to where we should have been, and that's going to be enough for English clubs at least to look away. But I think we'll see him pop back up in Spain, probably in the next campaign.
Gotcha. So what would you think about maybe Munchie calling on his old buddy Unai Emery to come back to Sevilla? Do you think that maybe could happen, or am I reading into things too much?
It's possible. You know, he's had the success with the three Europa League titles in a row, so I wouldn't count it out.
Gotcha. How about maybe Crystal Palace, so we can manage Wilfred Zaha?
Ooh, that would be good. Would they sign him and then be like, I really want to coach Wilfred Zaha, and they say that's perfect, and they'll be on the same page, and then they'll sell Wilfred Zaha, and we'll be back to square one.
And then they'll get relegated, yeah. Most likely. All right, so that just about wraps everything up here, listener, but thanks so much for tuning in, everyone, and we sure hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Arsenal Transfercast as much as we have. If you have any thoughts about the show, please leave a comment on the article, or you can at the show on Twitter at AFC Transfercast. Once again, I'm Martin Hawkins. You can find me on Twitter at LWOS. Thanks for being here as always, Zach. Can you please remind the people where they can find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at Zach Raymond, and give Footy Ado a follow as well at Footy Ado.
All right, and thanks for being here as always, Chance. Can you remind the people where they can find you on Twitter?
Of course I can, Martin. Listeners, you all can find me at Chance Hare with an E, LWOS.
And thanks so much for being here again, listener. We will see you next time.